done it again.
Fulham needed a goal scorer. It seems like they found one.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under. We're back again after the Liverpool game to discuss the upcoming game against Crystal Palace, a chance for Fulham to redeem themselves after a disappointing performance against Liverpool. Palace in fairly good form at the moment with a couple of good results. This one, for me, unclear as crystal. Skibby, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I thought it was going to be more of a reference to sort of Crystal Ball, but I've tried to predict as best I can about Fulham, and I have no idea. So this one's going to be absolutely fun because I'm genuinely out of ideas predicting this Fulham team this season.
Yeah, it's exactly why I've gone unclear as Crystal, but Crystal Ball would have been better. Where were you half an hour ago when I was coming up with the name?
You never asked.
Dad, how are we going tonight?
Full of these good ideas.
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Evening, gents. Evening, everyone. Yeah, well, I think that's the reason we exist, Skibby, because if it was predictable, anyone could do it. So we have to talk about it. Yeah, absolutely.
And Sammy, how are we going?
I'm just happy to be here. You know, I'm just enjoying. I just like coming here. You know, I just like being a part of it. I actually really enjoyed just listening to the podcast about like Liverpool, like because it's a crap situation. But I enjoyed the ambiance, and I'm more than happy to be here right now to discuss whatever this could be.
Well, let's find out. Let's jump straight into it. It's a return to the cottage, two games in a row, Saturday the 27th of April, 3 p.m. kickoff in the UK, which is 10 p.m. WA time, 12 a.m. for the East Coast of Australia, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern for the US. Skibby, as you sort of said at the very start of it, it's tough to predict this Fulham team at the moment, and I'd also say it's pretty tough to predict this Palace team. We'll have a look at their form a little bit later, but they've been up and down this season and have pulled off some amazing results and put in some tepid performances as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing I'm going to mention is the badge you've used in this slide. Just because you've put 1861 on your badge doesn't mean that's when you were formed. I don't know whether you guys know this whole thing.
Go, Skibby.
Oh, mate, I've had it with this whole thing about Palace and, we're London's oldest. They literally folded and then, 40 years later, then recreated Crystal Palace. I mean, you can't claim you're the same club. Anyway, that's just one rant.
Doesn't
over.
Really count.
Just because you put it on your badge doesn't mean it's true. Get over yourselves. Anyway, Palace. Yeah. Do you know what? I was thinking about this before we went live, and it's really hard to sort of know what kind of Fulham's going to appear, but what kind of Crystal Palace are going to appear? They have some fantastic players, like Eze. And that there's the other guy who I've just forgotten.
Elise,
exactly. Like if they're cooking, they absolutely smoke teams. And you see them and you think, oh, my God, these guys can potentially go for Europe when, you know, if they're on song. But they just seem to be so hit and miss. But for Fulham, probably a good thing playing them at home. And if we get an Elise and Eze who don't really fancy it that day, then, you know, it's ours for the taking. But then on the flip side, you've got a Fulham team who seem to be going through their own identity crisis, where one minute we can be, you know, taking down Arsenal 2-1, who absolutely smashed Chelsea yesterday, if you saw that. So that makes me feel really good about us. But then we can go and see what we've actually seen very recently and just not turn up at all and be really lethargic, and everyone across the board just doesn't fancy it. So you've kind of got two teams here in the middle of the table, not really much to sort of play for at the moment. So are they already got sort of eyes on the beach and ready for their holidays, ready for the next season? Or, yeah, are we just going to see a complete contrast? I genuinely have no idea.
It's such an interesting concept as well, because they're two kind of like teams with very, very interesting potential that are kind of like limping toward each other in a bit of a weird way, but like it could yeah, it's so hard to predict. It's very intriguing, but because
well, I think the other thing is that you always think, you know, when you're at Christmas, you think about the run-in And the run-in conjures up this sort of idea of this intense battle to the final finish line. And for the last couple of seasons, that's not how it's turned out for us. Yeah. It tends to feel like, without being dramatic or melodramatic, the wheels sort of falling off a bit. We're losing our way a little bit. We're even more unpredictable than we normally are, because we're still capable of an outstanding performance. And it's I'm not even sure if it's entirely an attitude thing, or maybe it's just a fatigue thing. Maybe teams have worked us out and we're not flexible enough. It's a combination of a bunch of things. But this, we're safe, but probably, honestly, as much as the Khans and the board might be very keen for us to really be pushing on and picking up more points and more table positions, because it's money and prestige and it does help with doing business, let's be honest. I think it's hard to see that there's that much to play for, you know, from a competitive sense. We've got probably one tough game and a couple of grudge matches to go. But I don't know. It's interesting to see what's happened to Palace. And since Roy left, and Roy was, you know, Mr. Safe and Mr. Predictable and Mr. Highly likely to grind you out a very good season result. But these guys are playing with flair and they seem to be having fun. And so that could be very, very dangerous, because, as you say, they've got some pretty talented individual players and they look like they're having fun at the moment.
It's there as well. I think Fulham are an expertly run team, or as about as good as they can possibly be, with an unlikely kind of group of players that Marco Silva's formed expertly well, whereas Palace is a group of extremely good players that have really, really struggled to find proper management, because what they had Vieira beforehand, that didn't really work. And then they had Roy Hodgson come back in kind of as more of like a safe pair of hands, a crutch. And now they're on a completely different track as well. But yeah, that identity is, it's a little bit all over the shop.
I wouldn't say Palace are full of extremely good players. They've got a handful of good players in Elise and Eze, who are both class. Across the board after that, though, when you look at a midfield of Will Hughes, Adam Wharton, Daniel Munoz, at the back, Nathaniel Klein, who I swear has been around for 30 years now.
It's been around 30 years.
Chris Richards. Anderson, we know, is a very good player as their skipper. Dean Henderson's been pretty poor in heart and goal. Gay's injured at the moment, along with Jefferson Lerma. Cech Doucouré as well is going to be out for this game. They're a solid side, and I think this is the only game we've had with a 0-0 draw this season, was the game at Palace. That's probably down to the way Hodgson plays. I feel like, you know, back to Dad's original point, that we have dropped off, and we did drop off last season, and maybe that's purely due to the fact that we actually are safe from relegation, because it seems as soon as we reach around that sort of mark, it really does dip off. And I do wonder as well, though, if that's going to be the same for Palace. They beat West Ham convincingly on the weekend. They've reached 36 points, which, I mean, to be honest, is probably enough to stay up this season. You probably need one or two points, and they know that they'll pick those up along the way. But do Palace have a huge amount to play for from here? I don't think they can really reach, look too high up the table and think, oh, we can get to the top half here. They might get to 13th. They might get to 12th. But really, there's not a huge amount to play for now that they've all but secured safety. So I do wonder if we'll see a little bit of what we've seen from Fulham in the last few weeks. They're currently sitting 6 points adrift of Fulham and Bournemouth, with, what's that, 5 games left to play. It's probably too much to pick up the slack there to actually overtake either of us. Now they're basically battling it out with Brentford for who finishes 14th, who finishes 15th. I do wonder if that will affect Palace mentally going into this game, because I see it affect Fulham massively every season, for the last two at least.
Do you know, I'm not sure, Jack. You cannot imagine for a moment Marco and his team have taken their foot off the gas. I just don't buy it. Just do not buy it at all. I'm just wondering whether it's just symptomatic of having a small, high-functioning, above-average Premier League kind of quality squad, that when we're hot, we're great, but it doesn't take much. You take Willian out, you take Tosin having an average game, or maybe an attitude problem and doesn't want to be here anymore, but it doesn't take much for us to cease to be a high-functioning team. And because, you know, look at Pereira. Is he on the beach? I doubt it. He was very, very hardworking. Muniz, he's not on the beach. And Bassi, you cannot convince me. Iwobi arguably didn't have a great game. Effort-wise, couldn't fault him. And I think you could go around the team with that. And I just don't think it's an effort-based thing. I think it's something
but,
more nuanced.
But I also, I don't think being on the beach is effort based. I think it's mentality based. I think there's the comfort of knowing that you're not in a relegation scrap. That doesn't mean you're not going to put in the effort, but maybe you don't chase that second ball quite as hard, and maybe there's just not the pressure of you go 1-0 down, we have to win this game to get back into it. I think there is a mentality issue there, because how can we get to 40 points and then completely stop season after season? We can't take that next step to push on. And maybe you're right that there's an issue with the depth of the squad, that we don't have the players to rotate through the season, and therefore come the sort of 30-game mark, the guys are knackered and you can give as much effort as possible, but you just don't have the legs for it.
It's not only legs. It's mentally, just psychologically.
As well.
Yeah, mentally.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
There's definitely something there. And I think next season feels like the season where we really need to take a step. And I'd be worried if we take a step next season, or are perceived to take a step next season, and run into the same issues again. Because I think we need to strengthen the squad in whole. We'll bring back, hopefully, Godot, Harris, Stansfield, and maybe they'll be able to play more of a part in the first team. And that will alleviate some of the burden for some of the other players and give us the opportunity to step forward. Let's have a look at their recent form for Palace. It's interesting reading. It's a bit all over the place with huge win against West Ham last weekend, a win against Liverpool at Anfield the weekend before. And that's coming off the back of two losses, one to Man City, where they did score two goals, to be fair, but conceded four, a 1-0 loss to Bournemouth, and a 1-1 draw with Forest. Skibby, try and translate that into something that makes any kind of sense.
I'll try my best. I mean, the West Ham game alone was unbelievable. Right? I remember sitting in the pub waiting before the Fulham game, and it was just sort of like 1-0, 2-0, 3-0. I was like, bloody hell, that's... thought it was like a glitch on my phone, but it was like 3-0, 4-0 after 40 minutes. And just West Ham. I think it was more a discredit to West Ham's defending rather than Palace just being that sort of suitable at attacking. But I mean, fair enough. You've got to be there to put the ball away. Probably one of Fulham's main problems this year. But I think there seems to be some similarities between us and Palace in a way that when they get that early goal, they sort of push on. And that's what I saw in the West Ham game. Mm. Whether it happens in the rest of the season, I'm not too sure. But basically, their tails were up. They were flowing. And it just really looked reminiscent of when we played West Ham and when we played Forest. It was just, you know, when it works, it works. But it's just very inconsistent. The Liverpool game was surprising. I think there was some quite big Liverpool mistakes, which we touched upon in the last pod before we played them, but they rode their luck a lot. I think there were so many chances that Liverpool just didn't take. And I think it's more it wasn't really a credit to Palace's defending or the way that they played. It was just more of a Liverpool had an off day. So the more that you kind of look at these results, you're looking more at West Ham had an off day after a really busy fixture list with, you know, Europe and the like. Liverpool just had a really, really off day, as we saw, even with a very heavily rotated Liverpool squad. They came to Fulham and they looked so comfortable. So I just don't think you can really read too much into that. And then the Bournemouth and Man City results are probably the kind of results that I would expect to see from this Palace side. So I think the only way to really break it down is if Fulham have an off day, potentially similar mistakes that we made against Liverpool, then Palace can hurt you. Absolutely. Eze Olise will have a field day. I think Mateta is even a bit of a handful, sort of 6'4", centre forward type, that, you know, Bassi and Tosin are going to know they're in a game. But for me, I don't think we have to look at Palace as a, they're going to come here and try and outplay us and play us off the park. They just don't seem to be that kind of quality at the moment in their squad depth. But I don't think we can write them off. And I think we'll be the kind of the doers of our own downfall if we were to sort of come away from this disappointed in a result.
Yeah, fair call.
Yeah. Jimmy? So basically we just have to almost let Palace allow themselves to be played, because we're potentially in a better position to actually overrun this game. And we, it would probably be in our best interest to just grab the game by the scruff of the neck as early as physically possible. And then Crystal Palace, just they're not necessarily the type of team to really be able to like scrape it back.
Basically. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Will Hughes probably about a good 7 years ago was a very good player, a really good midfielder. I don't think he's probably on that same level anymore. Therefore, the Fulham midfield, be it who it will be, I think has enough quality to sort of dictate. I think we mentioned that, was it not Decore, who the centre mid, I think, who came from West Ham, but he's missing, who's a bit of a battler. That will probably be a big loss for Palace. They don't really have that person like a Pellegrini who can really sort of take it by the scruff of the neck and sort of dictate play. And I think that's probably where this game will be won. If you can silence the outball from the midfield and the defence to Olise and Eze, then they can't really hurt you and they can't really do it all on their own. But if you're going to let them play and let them have that outball and start getting those chances to the two that I mentioned, then we could be in for a long day. But then I also have a lot of faith in the way that if Lukic plays and Paulinho, that they do defend and protect the back four quite well. Because those two, Olise and Eze, love to cut inside, love to sort of go into the center of the pitch. Therefore, if you can crowd that space out, then they won't have much luck, in my opinion, anyway.
That was more or less what I was actually going to ask next. Like, what's everyone's preferred team selection for this one? Like, who do you reckon is best suited for against Crystal Palace? Because it's like, squad selections are a little bit all over the place at the moment.
Oh, I know. Who Skibby wants to be the first name on the team sheet.
Yeah, I won't.
Another chance, Skibby. Give him another chance.
If Dad's allowed to shit on Tosin for like a solid year, Skibby can say whatever he wants.
So supposedly, well, Tosin doesn't have a fan club by the sounds of things. No, I mean, to be honest, for me, from everything that we just talked about, Tom Kearney just screams for this game, like on the ball, can make things happen. And in a midfield where they're not going to necessarily be in your face, I think they're going to kind of be more compact and sort of sit back. Therefore, TC would be my choice with Pellegrini. But I mean, like I said, if it is going to be Lukic, then I want to see something. I'm not writing him off, as many people think. I think as long as I can see something or just see that he actually gives us something for the game and he can work well with Pellegrini, then I'm absolutely for it. But the fact that his stats in the sort of the progressive stats just don't really add up. Therefore, you've got someone next to you who's battling, winning the ball and taking the possession. But then you've got somebody next to you who is trying to do the same thing and can't really do much else with it. Then you're kind of stuck. So I'm always a firm believer of Polina, Warrior, win the ball. Then he's not necessarily the best distributor of the ball. Therefore, pass it to Pereira or TC, who can take the ball, drive with it, do something with it and make something happen. That's what I'd like to see in this game. But to be honest, given the subs in the last game, I wouldn't be surprised if it will stay the same lineup. Hopefully Willian is fit again and come in for Bobby Decker over Reed. But if he's not, then yeah, I can't imagine it changing very much.
I'll put one out there. If you look at this Palace lineup, they sort of play a bit of a Christmas tree formation sometimes, where you got Mateta up top and Elise and Eze sort of sit behind him in the space. I'd almost be tempted to play Polina with Harrison Reed alongside him, and just
thinking that
completely disrupt that little patch of the field where Elise and Eze do most of their work. I think if you basically say to them, both of you, just get in there, get amongst them and really, you know, rough them up a bit almost and just disrupt play as much as possible. I'm fairly confident that Bassi and Tosin can handle Mateta as a one-man striker up top. I don't think they're going to have a huge amount coming down the wings that we're going to have to deal with. And I saw Pereira dropping very deep very often against Liverpool as well, which I don't mind. And imagine if you see him coming deep to pick up the ball after Polina and Reed win it back. I could see quite a lot of opportunities coming from that. So it's maybe a little bit more defensive, but I think it'll actually completely nullify any kind of attacking threat that Palace have going forward. And at that point, they concede a lot of goals, this Palace side. You know, even in a 5-2 win where they dominated West Ham, they still conceded two goals. They conceded four against City. They were lucky not to concede against Liverpool. We'll have a look at their... In fact, let's do that right now. We can have a look at the form comparison. The last 10 games, Palace have had 2 wins, 3 draws, 5 losses. They've conceded 18 goals in those last 10 games, with a goal difference of -6. Now, if you take out the 5 they scored against West Ham, in the previous 9 games before that, they'd only scored 7 goals and conceded 16. So, yes, they may appear free-flowing sometimes, but it's not like they're putting the ball in the back of the net that often, barring the West Ham game. And they do have some defensive frailties. I think if we can just completely nullify them and stop any attacking threat, this game should be ours for the taking.
I actually think you make a really good point, Jack. I think Lukic and Polina has kind of become the new conservative option, and I think there can be positives to that. Even if Silva's kind of unhealthily wedded to it at the moment, but I think this probably does scream for a little bit of a shot of adrenaline, and it's probably the perfect game to actually bring in Harrison Reed. Because I think in a game like this, you kind of want a player who's actually got a bit of a point to prove. I don't know why the Reed-Polina dynamic has really, really dropped off in recent weeks. Can anyone really speak to that? Because it was so cemented last season. And it just seemed to have fallen completely out of favor for Silva. And I can't really figure out why, because he just hasn't really entertained it that much.
Well, firstly, if it was me, I'd be picking Tom Cairney with Polina. Silva seems to be, as you say, strangely wedded to Sasa Lukic, even... He had one very good game and a couple of, you know, reasonable games, not terrible games. But I think what we've been talking about in the last sort of 48, 72 hours is the problems that we see in his pairing with Polina. And I'm not sure. I think it feels like Harrison Reed has fallen out of favour. I just don't think he's considered to be high enough quality without being mean to the guy. And I think what Silver was very much looking for from Harrison Reed very early on in the season, at the back end of last season, was not, I think his ability to do all the hard work and what we know him for is, I think, beyond question. It's his ability to actually carry the ball forward and actually creatively do something in the final third, which is what I think Silver is looking for. And fair credit to Lukic. He has done that on a couple of occasions very well. It's just that he drops off and then doesn't do it at all in other games. And yeah, we know Silver, Kenny can do that.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Kenny can absolutely do that. Sorry, go ahead, Kenny.
I was saying the Silver, he did talk about that. He wanted to add goals to Harrison Reed's game, and that was something he said last year. So he tried to sort of put him in number eight, be more progressive, sort of be more creative. And we saw elements of it. We just didn't see a lot of it. I think he scored his first goal for Fulham in, I think it was against Forest, wasn't it, away last year. And then he just didn't really push on. And I'm seeing very similar things with Lukic. It's almost like he's got the qualities what Silva wants in a number eight, but where he's trying to sort of coach it into him to be that player that can take it forward, add some goals to his game, add some key passes, and just, you know, kind of share the burden of Andreas Pereira and in being that kind of workhorse that can be box to box, as it were. But it's just not what I'm seeing from him. And to be honest, and this is something which I've said to my dad a lot this season, is the way that Pereira runs his socks off, I would love us to get a really nice number 10 in and Pereira to drop to that number eight position, because I think he's fantastic. If he's can complement Pereira in Polina in, you know, helping with the tackling and stuff, but as soon as he gets the ball out of his feet, he's only got one way he's going to go, and he's going to take that ball forward, look for that quick pass. And he does it a lot from where he is now, where he looks for that quick spray out wide. Or if he can do that from number eight and we have a number 10 in front of him who is potentially more clinical in front of goal, which Pereira unfortunately hasn't been to this year, despite the two goals at West Ham, that would be somewhere I would love for us to go. I think Pereira would be fantastic in that position. I think even for Brazil, he actually played in that number eight position. And had a fantastic game, got an assist to his name. And I think that's what we're just not seeing from our centre mids at this point. We're seeing Polina do all the dirty work, but we just need some more key passes or assists from centre midfield, which would be that kind of step up. But I think that even goes back to a point that, you know, Jack and Elton would say are talking about, which is, you know, why do we drop off? Why I just don't think we've got the quality, personally, to finish a season out and see it out that we want to push for Europe or the top half of the table, but we just don't really have the players who have the fitness or the quality to be able to do that towards the end of a season. I mean, it's a long, long season. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to take anything away from them, but it is a big ask to say, right, from March, we're going to keep pushing, where you're like, man, I've just been playing for about 6 months. I'm done. Which I completely
understand. And on top of that, we avoid relegation, and we've done that now. Exactly. We've reached our goal, and you're asking
which
for
Marco
more now from
always
me.
Says, doesn't he?
Yeah.
His 40 so, points is the goal.
A couple of things. I have loved Pereira when he's dropped deep, picked up the ball, and creatively really done brilliant things with it. Because it's instinctive for him. He's good at it, right? Yeah. I think there's a lot in that, actually, with him playing as a number eight. If he had someone who was a natural sort of 10 in front of him, that could be quite magical. The other thing about coaching someone like a Reed or Lukic to have, it's a bit like, you know, when a player approaches the box and everyone's shouting, shoot, 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 and he's just not got it in him. He's just not thinking that way. He's trying to find another player to lay it off, whether it's a confidence thing, it's just not in him. And I think it's very difficult to rewire someone at any level. I mean, look, if you're talking about a nine-year-old, maybe you've got, there's a lot of upside, right? But once you're already that professional footballer, how many people really recreate, you know, what everyone knows them for? It doesn't happen very often. Of course, there are cases of people who are incredibly adaptable, but I just cannot see Lukic being transformed into the guy that we ideally need him to be. And I'm afraid I think the same is for Harrison Reed. Love Harrison Reed, absolutely love him. But for what we need from him, I'm not sure he's going to get there.
You actually touched on a really, really interesting point. I'm deeply fascinated by this kind of stuff because I do think a person's personality kind of molds the player that they are, because I think skill as a Premier League player is just something that's always going to be there. Like, they're always going to be extremely skillful, very, very talented footballers. But at that elite level, you really kind of see what their personality is like. Pelini is a great example of that. I'm sure when Pelini was 9 years old, he was a striker. But as he's just gotten older, he has just become this tackler because he loves tackling, and that's the thing that he values, and then he's just gotten better at that. With players like Sasa Lukic, maybe he was a boss growing up, and then as he got pushed back, he just kind of just wanted to be a playmaker a little bit more. And so he's never going to be that attacking threat. That's just not his personality. And that's okay, because you can still use that. But we do
but
need
we
to...
can't.
Well, we, yeah, we can't.
That's, what
can't
we, really. That's not what we want.
Yeah. But we kind of brought him in thinking that he could be something, and we've just learned that he isn't, because you always got to give players time to become confident. Muniz is a really good example of this. You allow him time.
He's a freak.
Well, he is, but there was a long period where we didn't really know what a confident Muniz is. I feel like we kind of know what a confident Sasa Lukic is and what a confident Muniz is now, and a confident Sasa Lukic is kind of irrelevant to how we want to play.
I don't fully agree with that. I think when Sasa Lukic has been on, he's been brilliant. The problem is the inconsistency, and that's what the whole conversation in the last podcast was about as well, is that he's very good when he's good, but when he's not good, he's very bad, and it's those two extremes that are the issue.
But when he's very good, he's not going to take shots.
But he has taken shots. He's scored goals this season as well. But he's getting in the right positions, which is as important as scoring the goals in the first place, which is why we're all happy with what Muniz is doing. Even though he's not scoring goals, he's doing the right thing. But the problem is, when Lukic is off, I don't think he is doing the right thing. And so that's the issue, is that Lukic and Reed are squad players, and I'm happy to have them in the squad as some depth and backup for if we do have Pelini get a suspension, if we've got other players getting injured. They're good to have on rotation, but they're not first-team players for me at the moment. I've seen flashes from Lukic. I think Reed is probably just a little bit off the pace now. But again, you need more consistency. Consistency is a thing that Fulham have struggled with for the last 2 years, and we're not getting that from Lukic at the moment. And again, it feels like we're singling him out, and I don't think we are, because other players as well who are in similar positions.
I think that a lot of the consistency comes from if it's instinctive to you, if it's within your character and you're just required to make more of an effort, then I think consistency is more likely to be there. Like João Pelini, if you look at his properties and his characteristics, he's always that guy, give or take. He's, you know, he's always aggressive. He's always up for the tackle. And if that's what you need from that defensive midfielder, he's always on. You know, Lukic from time to time has been asked to be that guy who harasses people. Did a great job on Maddison. but he didn't look comfortable. It's like asking Sasa Lukic to be a nightclub bouncer. It's not in him.
But again, like you said, he did a great job on Maddison. So he's got the ability. So you can't make the argument that he can't do it. The problem is that he needs to be consistent with it. You need to always come in and do that.
It's not his natural game.
It doesn't matter. But what is his natural game at that point? Because I've not seen his natural game so far. What's his natural game? Is his natural game a tackler in the middle? Is his natural game someone who runs forward? I mean, I can't imagine he was told to only pass the ball backwards against Liverpool. His natural game, from my understanding when we first signed him, was someone who picks up the ball, passes forward and runs forward as well. And I've seen that from him a few times. But it's like sometimes he gets lost and maybe loses his way a little bit. And look, I don't want to get stuck on Lukic too much because we talked about it a lot in the last pod. My next question, I guess, is let's say Willian is out for the next game. I don't know how bad the knock is, but let's say he is out. Because I think if he's in, it's a given that he starts on the left, Iwobi on the right, Pereira in the middle. If Willian's unavailable, who takes his spot?
Love it to be Adama. I really would. I mean, Bobby did enough. I mean, Bobby had good flashes, but like, I think what we discussed was Bobby's Bobby, right? He's not going to be that kind of similar to Willian, pick up the ball, drive at the defender, you know, do some absolute magical stuff, which just I can't comprehend, but he just does. It's hard to say. He just does Bobby stuff, right? He just takes the ball down, looks for a pass, and just he's there, okay? And you can't fault him for it. But I think Adama, for me, has shown that he can be a good player coming off the bench, get at people, box it, get assists, fine. But I think he's deserved a chance now. And if we're not going to be, you know, if we don't really care where we finish and we're almost now, brakes are off, let everyone go out and have a bit of a laugh. Yeah, stick Adama on the right and just see what you can do and just get him to run at people. And I think, especially in the Palace game, because I think they play five at the back with wingbacks. So Adama will give, I think it's Mitchell who's the left back. So that will give Mitchell something to think about instead of just bombing forward all the time. I think Bobby Decord over Reed is probably the right choice for Liverpool because, you know, they're very attacking. He's quite defensive. Fine, I get it. But for Palace, yeah, stick Adama on. What's the worst that can happen? If he has a bit of a shocker, we're kind of used to it by now, so we can just put somebody else on. And I think no one really in those positions has solidified a right to play without Willian. I think we've given Wilson chances. We've given Iwobi chances on the right. We've given Bobby Decord over a chance. Give it to Adama. He's the only one in the wings who hasn't had a chance yet. So I would love for him to have a chance.
I kind of half agree. I think for me, I'd probably start Bobby only because I don't necessarily, and I know how this sounds, but I don't necessarily want Traore to play a full game. I kind of just want him to play a full half because Traore is best when a team has at least kind of been a bit gassed because he's just such a shot of adrenaline. And I don't think him playing a full 90 minutes has the same effect. I actually totally agree though. I feel that he does deserve more of an opportunity, but I also want to put him in the best position. And I think that probably would be giving him a first half because I think the first half is probably going to end up being a stalemate whether or not Traore is there or not. But I feel that in the second half, if he comes on when when Palace is a bit gassed, I feel that that could be really effective.
Yeah, now, the only way I'll counter that though is I think similarly at the start of a game, nobody's, you know, in maximum gear from the get-go.
Yeah,
so,
true.
I mean, Mitchell, I mean, I'm speaking from experience here. This is just my fitness, I think. I just hit a wall after like 2 minutes of running. But as a professional footballer, they don't get start off in the max gear. Therefore, I think if Adama can, his first gear is probably still faster than Mitchell's first gear. Therefore, they can grow into the game together, but he would still have something up above Mitchell. But I just think we haven't seen that. So I can't really comment on it just because we haven't seen that happen this year. And I mean, he started for Wolves. Therefore, we know he can do it in the Prem. Just give him a chance. But I mean, there is probably a shadow of a doubt for Wilson, to be honest, as well. But
yeah,
I think Adama for me is just the one.
I think it's just because Adama. Oh, sorry. Wait, sorry. Can I? I think it's just because Adama, when he does what he does in like the second half and potentially can get a goal, that really does emotionally destroy people. And I've been on the receiving end of that. So I just like that, especially in the second half. I feel that if the you get that in the first half, you just give them 80 or 90 minutes to potentially get back at us. And I don't want to give the other team the opportunity. Sorry, Jack.
What are you saying, Adama or not, Sam? I can't really tell off the back of your point. Okay. Because he said you just want Adama for the second half, which didn't really make much sense. Before you go, Dad, the one thing I will say about the benefit of Adama, Tyreek Mitchell at left back is 5'8" and quite slight as well. And I can't imagine he's going to be winning. He's pretty quick, to be fair, but I can't imagine he's going to be winning the physical battle very often with Adama.
Mm. So you think he'll end up in the Thames?
Possibly.
Just yeet him.
It's a long way to the Thames from Selhurst Park as well. But oh no, from the cottage, it's close. Yeah, he's got to get over the new stand. But yeah, easy.
Can I just say, please, can we have William?
That's the issue.
Please, I really hope the physios are working hard this week.
Yeah, please, can he be fit? And I really hope he is, because we are a different team with him in there. There's no question about it. I kind of agree with you, Skibby, about giving Adama a go, purely for the fact that when he's been given more than 5 minutes, I don't rate this. 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes for Adama. Correct. That's just unfair, and he should never be judged on that. And it kind of feels stupid, because I really do believe he can have more of an impact than giving 5 minutes. We're underdoing the whole thing. But like you say, it's not like he hasn't started for a Premier League team, and I'd like to see it. I'd really like to see it. And as much as he can be very high impact late in the game when everyone's gassed, I think his speed is going to bother a side right from the outset. And I think it stops them playing in a certain way. And I'd quite like to see the outcome of that as well. And if that creates chaos, just chaos, which allows us to score a goal early, that is the secret sauce we're always looking for this Fulham team. We can score in the first half, different ball game, you know. Go, Jack.
Yeah, I was going to say, the last sort of question I have around the lineup to pose to everyone, and Dad, I'll throw back to you first. Tosin is obviously being linked with a move away, hasn't signed a new contract with Fulham. It seems like he's going to be leaving. There's interest from Man United, apparently, and other teams far higher up the table than we are. With that being the case, would you suggest that Tosin is rested before the end of the season, and maybe De Fougerolles comes in for a couple of games, maybe Diop takes his place back, maybe Tim Ream potentially plays his last, well, maybe not Tim Ream, because Bassey would be shifted out of his preferred position, but do you think there's the possibility that we need to make a change knowing that Tosin is leaving, even just to give some guys a bit of extra game time before the next preseason and next season itself?
I have to admit that I really don't know what's going on inside the club or Marco Silva's head. And we've been trying to work this out for a really long time. We think Marco is the kind of guy who demands commitment and respect. And if you want to be part of this team, you know, I'm going to pick you, and I'm going to pick you on form. And if you don't, maybe he wouldn't play. Maybe he's after points at all costs. I don't really know where he stands on this, and I wish I did, because I can see about four different scenarios. as to why you would play Tosin or you wouldn't. What I'm completely confused about is if it, you know, I'm not the only person in the world who thinks Tosin's got an attitude problem ever. And at the moment, he definitely seems to be not committed or just vulnerable to. If he's not committed, he's vulnerable to looking like he doesn't care. Can I say it like that? And so I'm not even sure if Silva's angle here is to play him till the end of the season, because we know he's going to sign. And that's kind of that gentleman's agreement that we've made. Or if he just believes that Bassi and Tosin is his best pair on any given day, and he's just sticking to it like Silva can stick to things. I can answer this question. If we take the scenario, Tosin's going, what do we do? I would not play him. Given that we're safe, I'd actually use the opportunity to either bring Diop through, because nothing wrong with Diop. We know he can do it. He's had some questionable form in patches this season, but he was pretty good last year, and that was the Premier League last time I looked. And so, he was pretty handy. Would I love to see Luke de Fougerolles come through? Yep, absolutely. I'd love to see him be given a go. And I think a lot of people think he's too young and it's too early. I think he's good enough. I really do. And I would love to see what he and Bassi could do together.
I'm just not sure. If anything, I kind of, at a Premier League standard, I think de Fougerolles probably realistically would get more time at right back for me. I think, unfortunately, and I really don't like admitting it, but I just think at this stage, Bassi and Tosin is just the best center back pairing. And I just think as long as there's points to be had, we just got to like lead with our absolute best team. I think Tosin is 100% replaceable. And I think if he does go, or if he doesn't, I think we have to sign another center back of an equal quality. So then essentially this conversation just basically ends. I do like Diop, but I just don't think his partnership is as good as the one Bassi has with Tosin. So annoyingly, I think it has to be Bassi and Tosin, but I'm not that happy about it.
Yeah. I mean, forgive me if I'm forgetting something, but I don't really remember what Diop did wrong to get dropped, but it just sort of happened.
Broke his foot.
Well, but that was out of his control, really.
He never really won his place back after that.
He had a couple of games where he made some mistakes.
Very start of the season, he was shocking.
In contrast, are they worse mistakes than what we're seeing from Tosin right now?
I think Tosin has got more goals and a bit more reliable.
I think Tosin is better with his feet, and I think he is relied on as the guy who can play that great pass into the midfield. Certainly better than Diop, I think. Mm. I think he's more skillful with his feet than Diop, which is where I think Luke Fougerolles, it could be really interesting, because I actually think he's got good feet.
I think he looked good at centre back.
Yeah. It just concerns me that I don't think he's that big.
No, I was literally just about to say that.
How tall is he?
About 5'10".
No, surely not.
I think he's getting close to 6 foot, but he's not quite there yet. I think he's still got time to grow as a 17-year-old or 18-year-old, however old he is. Mm. And obviously you see players bulk up over a couple of seasons as well. So
he just looks
that will come in time. He does look slight, but he's so good with the ball at his feet. He reads the game really well.
Yeah, which I really like him.
You can also make up for your lack of physical ability, not ability, but physical strength, for example, by being able to read the game, which is what we saw from Tim Ream last season, especially the fact that he was easily a yard slower than every other player who played against. But his ability to read the play meant that he actually picked up that yard quite comfortably, and it didn't make that much of a difference. And I think we'll see that from De Fougerolles going forward. So I really hope he gets a chance.
It's just so hard, though, in the Premier League, just because it's as competitive as it is. And we're already allowing Bassey to kind of like come into his own. And Bassey's doing amazing, but he is kind of an experiment that's going very, very right. I'm not really sure how I feel about having two experiments on the go at the same time. Mm. I don't know. Maybe well, next season.
I don't think Bassey is an experiment. I mean, Luc de Fougerolles is a kid who's never played, you know, professional men's football. Bassey, you know, he's been around a bit and didn't have a good season at in Holland. But yeah, but he's a player, and I think it's a different scenario. But yeah, I don't know. I think the problem I've always been on Tosin's case, you know, I've always thought the guy's got an attitude. And I just think that I don't know why you tolerate that in the dressing room. He's not Messi, you know. If Messi had a terrible attitude, you'd still play him because he's that damn good. He's that much better. But I don't think Tosin is. And for what the vibes I get from him, I just wouldn't tolerate it. I wouldn't tolerate it.
And I think the reason they play together is because they're just very similar styles. Him and Bassey, they're both very aggressive. They're both very good with their feet. They're both pretty quick, to be honest. Tosin can be when he wants to be, but you don't see the same kind of aggressiveness and athleticism, I guess, from Diop. Potentially, that's probably why they get overlooked, but that's probably what would worry me about De Fougerolles. Fantastic player with the ball at his feet, don't get me wrong, but can he be that in-your-face, aggressive centre-back who's trying to intercept, get a foot on the ball first? It just doesn't look like he's strong enough for me. Like, imagine, take this game, for example. Mateta's being fed the ball, you know, 6'4", 100 kilos player. Is he going to really get the ball off him?
You don't really want to see a young kid get bumped off the ball and kind of embarrassed against someone and like his, that.
And his confidence will get shot. If he's getting bullied to buggery by Mateta, then it's going to ruin his confidence. So you kind of really have to ease a player like him. I think, yeah, definitely, if we start to learn what kind of player he's going to be for us and where we want him to fit into Marco's team, then we can start working on, right, we need you to get hit the gym a little bit more and work on the sort of strength conditioning. But I think it's just a little bit too early. Like right now, under 21s, yeah, he can bully kids his own age, no worries. But as soon as you start coming across sort of men in their 30s who are completely built, then you're going to struggle.
He needs to get Mooney's his personal trainer's number.
Absolutely, yeah.
He just needs to spend some time in a boxing ring with Mooney's, I reckon. They'll definitely learn a few moves. Right, well, guys, I'll push you all for a prediction for the weekend. Skibby, I'll start with you first, mate.
I'm going to go 3-1 Fulham.
Ooh. Love it. Confident. Sammy?
It's really boring, but I'm going to go 1-0. 1-0 Fulham.
I like that. Dad?
2-0 Fulham.
I just say thank you guys for being as concise as I think you've ever been on the podcast. your prediction section usually takes about 15 minutes. I'm glad we got through that in about 12 seconds. Yeah. I'm going to agree. I think it's going to be a Fulham win. I reckon 2-1. I can see Elise or Eze scoring an absolute blinder and it being a very nervy final few minutes in the game. But, I think being at home, where we pick up the majority of our points, I think this one should be chalked down as a win for us. But we'll wait and see. It should be a good game no matter what. Before we finish up, a bit of an announcement that we've got a new Discord coming very soon. It's something we've been working on for a little while. We'll be launching it before the end of the season, definitely. So please do get involved. If you've never used Discord before, it's kind of like a forum slash chat room style. There's multiple channels set up. Basically, we're going to be able to be the one-stop shop for all your Fulham content. It's got feeds of, you know, major Instagram accounts, major Twitter accounts, the official channels as well. There's going to be a lot of content on there, especially for sort of niche groups, the youth teams, Fulham women's team. So please do keep an eye out for the link, which will be posted fairly soon. And please do get involved with the Fulham Discord and build a bit of a community there, a bit of a one-stop shop for all things Fulham.
And it's free.
Oh, yeah, that's the big thing. It's free. No paywalls, nothing behind a paywall. You'll be able to interact with us, with other Fulham fans as well, from all over the world. So, yeah, please do get involved. We'd really like to build it up to be the place you go for your Fulham news going forward. Guys, I think we can probably end it there. Still, as the title says, I'm still pretty unclear on how this one's going to go. We've all predicted wins, but knowing Fulham at the moment, this could easily turn into a bloodbath. Fingers crossed it doesn't. But I'm looking forward to this game this weekend. I'm sure everyone else is. Skibby, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And I look forward to potentially sitting next to a Crystal Palace fan in the Putney end. Brilliant.
I'm sure he'll like Sasa Lukic though, so you'll have a great time together. Sammy, thanks for joining tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited about this one. Yeah, it's a good London game, so I'll have fun.
Good stuff. And Dad, thanks for joining.
Yep, thanks very much. And can I say, whilst we have discussed this, can I suggest that if anyone's keen to get involved early in the Discord server with us, for them to approach us and get access?
Yep, definitely. 100%. Well, now that we've covered everything, thank you to everyone who's joined in on the live stream. Thank you to all the people who consistently listen and subscribe to the podcast. And as always, come on, you Whites.